He wept again a little, and then he said, "Of course he must bury his reverend father, the prankish old man, with explicit honors, and carry him abroad with his sons and brothers and the sons of his brothers and all the male seed of the house. It will be a whole procession. It will be like a progress, and to the people it will look as though he went out of Egypt with all his family thither whence he came." Such a misleading impression should be avoided. It might cause unrest in the land, and lead to scenes and disorder if the people thought the provider was departing. I think they would feel it much less if my majesty departed and forsook the land out of grief over its ingratitude. Hearken, friend. What sort of retinue would that be, of only the children and the children's children? In my opinion, there is nothing else to do, and this conveyance is a perfectly good occasion for it, but to make a great progress. It must be one of the biggest that ever went abroad from Egypt, and in equal pomp returned again. What should I be if I granted a favor to my universal friend, and did not make the granting of it far outbid the favor asked? Say to him, Pharaoh grants you 75 days, and covers you with kisses, that you may convey your father to Asia, and not only your family and their entourage shall attend you and the corpse, but Pharaoh will command a whole great progress, a journey of state, and the cream of Egypt shall bring your father to his grave. I will order my whole court, Akhenaten sends word to you, the highest of my servants and the most aristocratic in all the land, the heads of state with their retinues, wagons, and armed men in very great strength. They shall all go with you, O apple of my eye, and follow the bier in front and behind and on both sides, and then just so escort you back to me when you have deposited your dear burden in the place where he should lie. The Great Progress. Such was the answer which Maisakhme brought back from Akhetaton to Joseph, and all was arranged and put in train accordingly. Invitations, which were, of course, commands, were issued by a high palace official called Privy Councillor of the Levy and of the Privy Council, and sent out by running footmen. The day was fixed when the participants were to come from all parts of the country and assemble in the desert outside Menfe. It was a burdensome honor that was thus bestowed on Pharaoh's servants and the great ones of his house and of the land of Egypt, but there were none who would not have taken care not to refuse. Yes, some notabilities who were not bidden had to listen to the taunts of the favored ones, and were like to fall ill with chagrin. It was no small undertaking to organize the huge procession which assembled together in the desert by members and groups. It fell to a captain of troops whose regular title was Charioteer of the King High in the Army. For this occasion, however, and for the duration of the progress, he received another title, Organizer of the Great Funeral Train of the Osiris, Jacob ben Yitzchak, Father of the Great Vice-Spender of the King. It was this field officer who drew up the order of the procession with the list of particulars in his hand, and reduced to order the confusion of wagons and litters, riding animals and beasts of burden, into a properly graded procession of regularity and beauty. He also had charge of the military taken along for protection. The order was this. A host of soldiers, trumpeters, and drummers came first. Then Nubian bowmen, Libyans armed with sickle-shaped swords, and Egyptian lance-bearers. Then followed the pride of Pharaoh's court, as many as could be spared from his entourage without derogation to the person of the god. Friends and unique friends of the king, fan-bearers on the right hand, palace officials of the rank of the head of the Privy Council, and privy councillors of the royal commands. Highly placed personages such as His Majesty's chief baker and chief butler, the Lord High Steward, the keeper of the king's wardrobe, the head of the fullers of the great house, Pharaoh's sandal-bearer, his head wig-maker, who was also a privy councillor of the two kingdoms, and so on and so forth. These elegant toadies formed the advance guard before the catafalque, which was taken into the procession when they reached Goshen, and thereafter towered above it in glittering splendor. Jacob's coffin, shaped like a man, sparkled with gems and with the gold mask and beard it wore. It lay on a bier, which in its turn rested on a gilded sledge, and this again on a car with draped wheels drawn by 12 white oxen. The lofty vehicle swayed along, frequently accompanied by the wailing of flutes and the song of the professional mourners. It passed the houses of the dead and his connection, who now joined the train. There was Joseph, with his sons and his household staff, of which Mysakme was the eldest servant and head. There were Joseph's 11 brothers, with their sons and the sons of their sons. All that bore male names in Israel followed Israel's bier, with the closest attendants of the dead, foremost among them Eliezer, his oldest servant, and a very long and numerous train. But what a host now followed after it! For now came the administrative bureaucracy of the two lands, the viziers of Upper and Lower Egypt, Joseph's immediate subordinates, the head bookkeeper of the Office of Supply, such people as the inspector of the king's bulls and of all the cattle in the land. He had also the title of steward of all horned and clawed and feathered creatures, the head of the fleet, the actual steward of the privy chamber, the warden of the scales of the treasure house, the general overseer of horses, and numerous actual judges and head scribes. Who could set down all the titles and offices whose wearers were honored by the command to accompany to foreign parts the mummy of the father of the provider? Military, with standards and cornets, followed the officers of the state. And after that came the baggage train with luggage and tents, and the forage wagons with mules and drivers. For what immense quantities of food and drink in the desert did not such a train require? A very great company, as the tradition rightly says. One can only try to picture this long, drawn-out caravan of splendid riding horses and luggage carts, of bright feathers and glittering weapons, all the snorting and rolling and marching, the whinnying of steeds, the braying of donkeys and bellowing of bulls, the crashing of trumpets, the throbbing of drums, the wailing of the professional mourners, and out of the midst of it all, the amazing, towering structure of the hearse with the mummied corpse inside. Joseph might be well pleased. Into Egypt the father heart had once lost him. Now all Egypt must pay tribute to that agony and bear the dead Jacob on its shoulders to his grave. The amazing host wound its way eastward to the border, stared at everywhere on its way. Now it entered the desolate stretches which had to be covered in going from the bottom land of Hapi in Pharaoh's eastern provinces to the land of Haru and Amor. It went along the upper edge of the desert tableland of Sinai, but then it took a direction which would have surprised anyone who knew its goal, for it did not go by the usual and shortest way to Gaza on the sea, through the land of the Philistines, and via Beersheba to Hebron. It followed the fall of the land which runs south of the port of Kadati, eastwards to Amalek, and towards Edom to the southern end of the Salt Sea. It skirted this, and went along its eastern shore to the mouth of the Jordan, and a little way up the river valley, and thence, that is, from Gilead and from the east, across the river and into the land of Canaan. A long detour for Jacob's great funeral procession. It made a journey of twice 17 days, and was the reason why Joseph had asked for 70 days' leave. Even so, he had not asked enough, and overstepped the 75 that Pharaoh, in his love for his favorite, had granted. But he had early decided on this long way round, and disclosed his intention to the officer who organized the procession, and he had at once approved. For he had been doubtful of the effect of an Egyptian eruption in such strength, with so many soldiers, from Gaza up on the military highway, lest it make difficulties and arouse excitement and mistrust. He had himself preferred to go around through more tranquil country. But in Joseph's mind, the long detour meant greater honor for the progress. The solemn convoy could not be too extravagant in time and trouble to please him. No distances were too far through which the pride of Egypt should carry his father on its shoulders. That was the thought which had determined him to make this detour. When they had circled the sea of the plain and gone a piece upstream along the Jordan, they came to a place near its bank called Goren Etad. In olden times there had been nothing but a threshing floor there, grown round with thorns. But now it was a populous market. Nearby on the river was a great grassy place. There they spread out and made camp, watched curiously by the people of the neighborhood. They stopped 7 days and held a wailing, renewed every day. a 7 days' service of mourning and lamentations, very shrill and bitter, so that the children of the land were much impressed, as was indeed the intention, since even the animals were in mourning. "A very important encampment," said the inhabitants, with their eyebrows raised, "and a grievous mourning to the Egyptians is this." So they called the meadow thenceforward nothing but Abel Mizraim, or the Wailing Meadow of Egypt. After this ceremonial pause, the procession formed again and crossed the Jordan by a ford, which the children of the land had made easier for their own use by laying stones and sinking tree trunks. The sledge with Jacob's mummy was taken from the wagon for the crossing, and the 12 sons together bore it over the river on poles. Now they were in their own country, and went up from the steaming river valley to the fresher heights. On the ridge they followed the well-kept roads, and came on the 3rd day before Hebron. Kirjath Arba lay surrounded on the slope, and a multitude of folk hurried down to it to see the splendor which was moving in with its sacred burden, and taking its place in the valley where the walled hollow was, the double cave, the ancestral burial place. Adapted by nature, but enlarged and built up by the hand of man, it was not double on the outside, and had only one door. But if you opened up the masonry, as they now did, a round shaft was revealed, leading downwards. And from it, right and left, 2 passages, closed by stone slabs, branched off and led into the 2 barrel-vaulted tomb cells, which gave the place its name of the Double Hollow. But if one thinks of how many and who had found their eternal home in this hillside chamber, one pales with fear, as the brothers paled when they opened it. The Egyptians were not affected. Some of them might even have stuck up their noses at such a homemade affair. But all that was Israel went pale. Shaft and passages were very low and narrow. Only 2 people of Jacob's house, his eldest servant and his 2nd eldest, one in front and one behind, could enter, and even they could hardly squeeze in to carry the mummy down and lay it in the chamber, whether the right or the left one is no longer known. If dust and bones could be surprised, certainly there must have been great astonishment in the hollow when the newcomer arrived, decked out in his foreign folly. But absolute indifference reigned, and the 2 bearers hastened out of that ban of corruption and stooped through the shaft into the sweet air of the living world. There, slave artisans stood ready with mortar and trowel, and in a trice the lodging was closed again, for it should receive no one else after Jacob. The father bestowed, his house closed after him, the 10 stared as the workmen filled the last hole. What were they thinking? They looked so sallow, and they bit their lips. They stole glances at the 11th, and cast down their eyes. To be quite frank, they were afraid. They felt lost, forsaken, and forlorn. The father is gone, the 100-year-old father of these 70-year-old sons. Till this moment he had been present, if only as a mummy. But now he was walled away, and their hearts sank. Suddenly they felt that he had been their shield, he alone. He had stood where now nothing and nobody stood between them and the payment. They stuck close together and whispered in the fading light of day. The moon rose. The everlasting pictures hung themselves in the sky. The dampness of the mountain regions rose in a mist among the huts of Jacob's train. Then they called the 12th, Benjamin, Rachel's son. "Benjamin," said they, stiff-lipped, "listen to this. We have a message from the departed to Joseph, your brother, and you are the best one to give it to him. For shortly before his death, in his last days, when Joseph was not there, the father summoned us and said, 'When I am dead, you are to say to your brother Joseph from me, forgive your brothers their misdeed and their sin that they did so evilly by you. For between you and him will I be in death as in life, and I lay it upon you as my last wish and command that you do them no ill, and forbear to take revenge for things gone by, even when I seem not to be there. Leave them to shear their sheep unshorn.'" "Is that so?" queried Benjamin. "I was not by when he said it." "You were never by at anything," they answered. "You cannot talk. A little chap like you does not have to be by at everything. But you will not refuse to give his grace your brother, Joseph, the father's last wish and command. Go to him at once. We will follow you and wait to hear what he says." So Benjamin went into the tent to the Exalted One and said hesitatingly, "Joseph L., forgive me if I disturb you, but the brothers desire to say to you through me that on his deathbed our father solemnly adjured you not to do them harm after he was dead and gone for what happened years ago, for even after death he would stand between you to protect them and forbid you your revenge." "Is that so?" asked Joseph, and his eyes got wet. "So particularly true, it most likely is not," answered Benjamin. "No, because he knew there was no need of it," added Joseph, and two tears rolled down from under his lashes. "They are probably outside now and have followed you?" he asked. "They are out there," the little man answered. "Then let us go out to them," said Joseph. And he went out into the starlight and beneath the weaving beams of the moon. There they were. They fell down before him and said, "Here we are, servants of your father's God, and we are your servants. So forgive us our trespasses, as your brother here has said to you, and repay us not according to your power. As you have forgiven us while Jacob lived, so forgive us likewise after his death." "But brothers, my dear old brothers," he answered, and bent down to them with his arms stretched out, "what are you saying, as though you were afraid? You talk as though you were, and want me to forgive you. Am I then as God? Down in Egypt they say I am as Pharaoh, and he is called God. But really, he is just a sweet, pathetic thing. When you talk to me about forgiveness, it seems to me you have missed the meaning of the whole story we are in. I do not blame you for that. One can easily be in a story and not understand it. Perhaps that is the way it ought to be, and I am to blame myself for always knowing far too well what was being played. Did you not hear from the Father's own lips when he gave me my blessing that my life has always been only a play and a pattern? Did he remember, when he pronounced judgment on you, the bad things which happened between you and me? No. He kept quiet about them, because he too was in the play, God's play. I was protected by him when I had to rub you all the wrong way and provoke you to evil in my crude childishness that cried to heaven. God turned it all to good. For I came to feed many people, and so I was forced to mature somewhat. But if it is a question of pardon between us human beings, then it is I myself must beg for it. For you had perforce to be cast in the villain's part, so that things might turn out as they did. So now am I to use the might of Pharaoh, simply because I command it, to avenge myself for 3 days' discipline in the well, and so make ill again what God has made good? I could laugh at the thought, for a man who uses power only because he has it, against right and reason, he is absurd. If he is not today, he will be. And it is the future we are interested in. Sleep in peace. Tomorrow, in God's good providence, we shall take our way back into that quaint and comic land of Egypt." Thus he spoke to them, and they laughed and wept together, and stretched out their hands as he stood among them, and touched him. And he too caressed them with his hands. And so endeth the beautiful story and God invention of Joseph and his brothers.